Ooh, you're now rocking with the best. This is D Suave. You're tuned in to D Suave Radio, aka Steal This Beer. Please donate to these guys so they can continue doing this thing. Patreon, please donate. Gracias.
Steal This Beer, a candid weekly discussion about beer, over beer, by a couple of guys that think about beer way too much.
All right, hey y'all, it's 5 o'clock on Monday, and we are stealing beer. I am Augie Carn.
Hi, I'm John Hall.
Hey,
John
the hangover Hall. Voice.
Yeah, it's I almost wore shades for this recording. We're out of town again, y'all. It's actually something like 9 on Monday?
No.
9 on Saturday?
Saturday morning. Right, of Saturday Hunapu morning. Day.
Hunapu. Hunapu.
Sure.
We'll be in 4 hours, 3 hours?
Yeah, the countdown is on, so...
Right. So we stole Chase Healy of American Solera to sit down with us bright and early with raspy Augie drunk voice and talk about making beers. So before we went, John and Chase were talking about Oklahoma law changes, and I know nothing about that, and that's definitely something I'm interested in the thieves yeah. love. So just tell me what it was like and what it is.
Yeah, you know
what
I mean? Significant, right?
Just dive right in.
Yeah. Get closer to the mic if you can. Yeah,
closer to the mic.
They're used to us, and I'll sidetrack you no matter what you do, so it's better if we start on topic.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, being in Oklahoma, the middle of the country, in the Bible Belt, things were slow to get going for liquor laws, for breweries, and luckily we had some people working for us hard. You know, we started a guild and hired someone to help us, and that really got things fixed here pretty quickly. So August 26, 2016, the laws changed allowing breweries in our state to sell directly to consumers. Before that, we could sell 4% or lower beer directly to consumers because it was considered non-intoxicating. and we did that. And like so we could kind of have a tap room, but okay. not really a business.
Now, when you say sell to consumers, are we talking packaged or like... For consumption on-premise?
On-premise or
okay.
off.
All right.
Both. But just so we could kind of do it before, and we did, but you know, no one's that excited about that kind of beer. And I mean, people like to drink beer like that. But anyways. So
but it's tough to actually have a business model when you're competing up against some of the bigger guys that make that beer already.
You have limitations.
And it's not like Utah where that's the law for all draft. It's just breweries were held under four. So you could be at a bar and be drinking...
Anything you
Any
want.
Any beer.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Anything you want. So American Solera effectively launches August 26th of 2016, the day the law changes. So
well timed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we sat and waited on that one for that to occur. And ultimately, that launches a taproom culture or the beginning of one in our state. And now breweries are opening because of it.
All right
and
on.
Only opening to a size that allows them to sell at their location and they don't do anything else. And interestingly enough, I mean, we make beers that we like to share and communicate, you know, and talk beer with the rest of the world. But ultimately, as this law has changed, it's changed our business. And we're doing like 80% of all of our sales just across our bar.
That's wow. awesome. How wow. big is your system? Like 80% of how much?
It's a 15-barrel.
Oh, right on. So brewhouse. Proper so, house.
Yeah, we may have 30-barrel tanks. And, you know, we make pretty decent, you know, batches, single or double batches. And we could typically, yeah, right now, we do 15 barrels of IPA, and it lasts us 3 weeks.
That's wow. fantastic. Are you sticker canning? People do love a sticker can.
We honestly, like, we're, like, literally about to do some here, like, in 3 weeks.
Okay.
We've done a couple of runs before, and that's worked out okay, but we kind of re-geared and have really dialed our beers in. It's interesting, like, when this started, 2016, with the launch, we launched with an IPA, and it was okay. I just, for the last 5 years prior to that, was not brewing IPAs. It wasn't part of the focus.
We should talk about that. You come from Prairie. Like, you started
right.
Prairie.
Yeah, 2012.
Okay.
We launched Prairie with a Brett Condition farmhouse ale. Then we did a dry hop version, and then we did, you know, a sessionable version that was in a six pack. And so the focus was on farmhouse beers, and then eventually imperial stouts. And, you know, we made a one IPA, but it was really not part of the focus. And that was the part that, like, you know, we were able to hang our hat on, is that we weren't making those styles, and that was cool. Ends up, though, when you have a tap room, people really love hoppy
people
beer.
People do like to drink
people
hoppy beer.
People love hoppy beer.
They walk in and they want the IPA. Yeah.
It's a little deflating, too, but, like, it's kind of exciting and a challenge to try to make those beers and get people excited when you dedicate your life to not making them.
Right.
And then all of a sudden. But I've enjoyed it, and I think that's part of, like, as a brewer where like, I get excited is, can I figure out these beers? Can I make them better? And so we launched in 2016 with one that we even canned. A little malty, you know, hops were there, but every batch, they just get better and better. We figure it out. We talk to more brewers. And to now where I put the ones we're making up against anyone's IPAs.
Right on. So let's talk about that progression, because it's fun. There's definitely been a migration of what hops have done in the last 5 years. But what have you found to be significant changes that you thought greatly improved? Like I like to try to keep a toe in everything, right? I still like to have a Chico double. I still like, you know, I'd love to fool around with London 3. I love to fool around with Fuller's. But for me, it really seems to be yeasts that make a difference. Because as wonderful as hops have gotten, and you can fool around and push them from red fruit to yellow fruit to citrus fruit, and those are shades, the yeasts are what I'm always most obsessed on. And coming from a wild place, I imagine that would be your inclination too. Like, what have you found where you're like, oh no, that made it, like, did you switch from...
We've bounced around.
But like London malt to Pilsner malt, what'd you do that made it was like, oh, that's right where I wanted it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was going, yeah, from like just like a pale, you know, malt to just like basically using Pilsner malt and standard two row to really not be taking over the beers.
Yeah.
Because they will. And then yeast, you know, trying every strain that we could get our hands on.
Are you finding you have a couple favorite, or are you finding ones
really,
like, that's my flavor?
You know, we really like the London 3
right on,
for our beers. It works well. We can, you know, we crop it pretty quick, move it on to the next batch, and we just enjoy the flavor it makes.
Yeah,
you know,
and it's fast. I mean, it loves to do its job, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, within a few days, we're cropping yeast. And, you know, the interesting thing has been is making these sour beers and these fruit beers and striving to extract, like, essence and flavor. It's almost exciting to make these beers the way we are, because I feel like we're doing that in the same way, like, but instead of doing it over the course of like 3 months, where we're refermenting on fruit, we're doing it like in like 3 weeks and creating these beers that express like flavor extraction in like a big, exciting way, the same way we would do with fruit, but using hops and kind of viewing them the same way.
Yeah, that's definitely fun and cool. So I should go to the Black Glass,
please.
And then we'll come back to how to make beers in the morning.
Yeah.
Again, excuse my raspiness, thieves. We were teaching bartenders how to make margaritas last night, as we will.
I don't like that we.
You've done it with me a couple times now, so it's a we thing, man. Anyway, so what brings us together on Steal This Beer is a candid conversation about beer, what it is, what it's doing, where we'd want it. Not what we hoped it would be, thought it would be, or think it should be. You know, just what it is.
Yes.
So to facilitate that, we drink blind out of opaque black glasses. Now we have a road show here. So Kennedy, you brought these beers?
I brought these from from my house.
You actually like?
Wow,
these,
you
these have been
bag.
In the belly
Go
of an airplane,
the
or did these come down on the Greyhound with you?
I flew down, actually, right. Despite what we said in the last episode.
I just want to stay consistent with the tale.
Okay. Yeah, they were on
these were on the fixie in the belly of the plane.
Right.
Okay.
And so, Chase, you know what one of them is, and then we stopped him from telling you what the second is, right?
I have no idea on the second one,
right.
And I at least I know who made this one.
Okay.
Nice.
So it's a very good early morning breakfast beer.
Yeah, fruit it's, juicy. I'm getting like a little passion fruit, little guava, some mango kind of like.
I may not
like
be
actual fruit.
So all I'm getting right now is acidity, but I should caveat that I have a fruit plate that I've been snacking on to rehydrate my drunken body, and I literally have been eating raspberries, blackberries, and mangoes. So that's gonna, if that's there, that's gonna suck that out of that for me.
Yeah.
But I love its acidity. It's sprightly. It's quick. It's fun. It's dancing. It's
Yeah, it's a nice, this is mercifully a really nice way to start the day.
I feel like Justin didn't know he'd be serving these to us at 9 a.m. I feel like he should have brought a crazy ass stout.
Well, what about you, Chase? Is this like in your wheelhouse?
Absolutely. You know, I get like strawberry fruit roll up.
Mm-hmm. Neat.
Like fruit leather. Like leather, yeah. I guess it's like,
the minute you said it, I got it.
Yeah.
And what's funny is I still have seeds from strawberries in my teeth, so it's even more leathery. I was like, yeah, definitely. I was like, wait, that might be a strawberry. But yeah, pretty. It's leaning towards a little sulfur tone, but not too far.
So one of the things that we do, Chase, is write the sentences, where would you want to have this beer?
Wow.
Yeah, who would you drink it with? What, you know, what place would you think that this beer would fit in?
Just go for it.
I'll go first to lead the course so that you're not blindsided.
I like the blindside.
But for me, this is definitely one of the Lauren ones. So my wife is a big fan of acidic. Like, she would drink pickle juice if you let her. And she loves decidedly acidic beers. And this is what I said.
Hold on. Why wouldn't you let her?
What?
Why wouldn't you let her drink pickle juice?
Well, because I like to have pickles. And okay. They dry out if you drink the juice. But anyway, but so it's the joke I make is, in most standard situations with a 750, I get three glasses and she gets one. But if I opened one of these, she'd have three before I had my second. So this is a Lauren wine. And I like it. I like it for hangover drinking. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like this is just, like, this is where I want this, is with this hangover. It's perfect, right? Because I was drinking lime juice last night, and this is nice and fresh, and this is right getting me going for a day of drinking, you know, pastry stouts in the hot Tampa sun.
Yeah, I think in the same vein, like, this is sort of a nice brunch beer, something like a lazy Saturday, Sunday at home, fresh granola.
Yeah, perfect.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. Yogurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you?
I mean, for us, and like, you know, the way we drink beer around the brewery, this would be like a end of a long bottling day kind of beer for us. We're like just something light, like a lager or a pale ale, like not special enough. You know, we've maybe all been on our feet for 9 hours, like filling them by hand one at a time. And it's like, let's drink some good shit because we earned it.
Goes with being sweaty.
Let's drink the good stuff.
It's a good reward.
Right on. All right, Justin, kudos to you on this one, buddy.
This is from my home state. This is from the Vale Brewing.
Oh, we like the Vale. Do you Vale us every time you bring a beer?
Nope.
Are you a stockholder?
Yeah, he's getting money under the table.
Are you sneaking these beers in? Are you a Russian bot?
Yeah, but it's a collaboration with Oxbow.
Okay.
It was recently on the show.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's called Concentric. It's a cool ship beer that they've added Brett to after the fact, aged in red wine barrels, and some Virginia wildflower honey.
Right on.
Interesting.
I didn't get any of the honey aromas, but I guess the dryness would explain some honey addition.
Yeah. It's interesting that we all got those fruits out of it, though. And that.
Now, as a guy who in the American craft brewing lexicon has the right to say what is wild and what isn't, would you call a cool ship beer a cool ship beer if you then added bread after the fact? You know what I mean? Like that sounds dicey to me. I'm glad they were honest about it. I'm not saying bullshit, and they obviously did both processes, but it's funny to me to say it's a cool ship beer that they added bread.
So they say that in the description online. On the bottle, it just says mixed fermentation ale.
Right there on. You go.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing is that as brewers, we're trying to find different paths, new ways to do things. So I think it's an exciting idea to be able to use your cool ship to pick up some complexity and maybe something wild, but then control it at the same time. I think it's just exploring new ways to experiment with fermentation and what you can get out of it. So I think that it makes sense to explain the other thing you did, but that I think that there's still value in that cool ship portion of it. So I think it's an exciting way to be experimenting.
The lactic had to come
that would have had to have come from that. Yeah.
So very cool. Neat. So let's talk about I'd rather talk about American Solera because it's where you are and what you're doing, but Prairie's a big fucking deal. Let's talk about Prairie and so last night you held a talk on Fooder. Let's start at Prairie, get to American Solera by way of fucking around with wood and you know what I mean? I feel like the thieves will be like, how did you have him on and not talk about Prairie? But
sure. Yeah. And what's crazy is, you know, they've been running strong, you know, with kind of me more or less, you know, as a helper instead of a director for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So they are executing and doing beautiful beers, and we talk every now and then about what's going on and what we can do, and collaborate here and there on beers. But really, they've been driving things forward and making great beer. You know, I don't want to use the word without me, but I haven't needed to direct or give any direction or do anything over the last 2 years as they've blossomed and grown.
That's awesome.
In the brewery they are. So,
right on.
You know, things have been going really well, and it's cool because they're able to continue to grow and develop new things and build off of what we did together. And I can kind of make some beers in our spot and kind of chill out a little bit, and it works well for everyone's doing what they want.
And move some IPAs across that bar of yours.
Yeah, that's crazy. I look at our sales reports, and it's a difference, I think, in that people want to experience and taste beers like this, the fruit beers we're making. But like at the end of the day, when someone wants like a glass of beer, it's hard to beat.
So drinking is also so situational, right? One of the things we talk about on the show a lot is there's drinking beers and impression beers,
mm-hmm.
right? And there's drinking IPAs and pales, and there's one, you know, I'm going to have 24 different IPAs tonight, so they need to be this kind of impressionistic London 3 bomb kind of IPAs. And there's situational drinking, right? So this is a fun beer to sit down with four like-minded beer geeks like this and talk
Absolutely.
About its nuance and
yep.
subtlety.
Yep.
But
yep.
if we're standing in a crowd and we're trying to have a good time, there's something nice about a slutty IPA
Absolutely.
That's just fun to fucking
Absolutely.
Throw down your throat and have a ball. And I don't ever want to be judgmental of either experience, although it's hard not to be dismissive of the one that, you know, because one is thinking and dissecting and critiquing and taking seriously, and the other is reveling and joyous.
Yeah.
So we are in the hotel. All the brewers are in, guys.
Well,
and my
buddies are waving.
But a million people are walking by and waving to Chase while I'm sitting here going, what's everybody doing?
They're all getting on the bus to go, and I will get there eventually.
We'll all get there. It'll be fine. Hunapu is not an out-of-the-gates kind of thing. Go ahead.
You know, the interesting thing, though, about situational, because I've been to your brewery. I've been to American Solera, and it strikes me as a place where I don't necessarily want to drink IPA. The environment that you've made, they're great beers, but the environment that you've made is very conducive to the wood age beers that you have, and your tap room there and sitting there, the beers that come out of your fooders, the beers that are coming out of your wood, they feel at home in your
oh, absolutely.
Place in a way that I would kind of feel weird drinking a lager or, you know, a Hefeweizen or, you know, anything else really in that space.
Well, so here's the thing you don't know.
Okay.
I've opened it.
There's so many things.
Lifting the skirt on American Solera.
You're absolutely right about that location, but I've opened a second tap room in town.
Oh.
And it's next to a concert venue and
it's got those
world-class barbecue and a coffee roaster and an Italian restaurant and two other bars. And it's very convenient.
All
for
under
people.
The same roof?
No, just
oh,
in
okay.
the intersection.
Like in that neighborhood.
It's
but it's got like those Edison light bulbs that are a warm blue and a wooden bar top just like this. It just makes people want to slam down IPAs
so
out of nautical pints.
It's a, well, we do still use a wine glass there to serve them in, but and they steal them all the time.
Oh, it's the worst thing. Oh, it's the worst thing.
But,
I have the dumbest tasting glasses. Like I have those little nautical pint, you know, 4 ounce mm-hmm. tasting glasses. Nobody needs one of those, let alone eight, and they just we have a sign on the door that says please leave the tasting glasses in the tasting room. It's just it's crazy. Why do people steal those little glasses?
Well, yeah, these are full beautiful wine glasses.
Oh, well, then
and
it's
I
your
get
fault.
Why they steal them. They go outside and it doesn't matter. But so that location is interesting in that it's created this almost like after work kind of grabbing a drink culture, so it's very different. It's 25 seats, 25 patio seats, and a trailer that serves brick oven pizza.
Nice.
So it's just a whole, it's actually, when you look at the way, you know, beer is bought in both spots, it's a whole nother thing.
Now, the brick oven pizza, is that you too, or is
no,
that like some guy
a
you,
a, yeah.
you found mm-hmm. a with? Would you be allowed to do your own food? In Jersey, we can't.
Like, oh, yeah, we
I'm
would.
Not allowed
I just,
to serve food.
I have no damn clue yeah. how to do it, and I don't want to have to take away my energy of beer making to focus
right.
on that. So partnering with someone was definitely the way to go.
Right on. And
what's the appeal of the wine glass?
I just think it's a nice presentation, and it makes sense for the barrel-aged and wine hybrid beers that we're making. And then it's just easier to not have a bunch of different glasses.
Talk about your wine hybrids, because that's cool. We had a crazy wine hybrid on here recently from Jeffers at Firestone Walker.
So where he's at is there's a winery located in their town called Field Recordings. And I've been lucky enough to become friends with Andrew and work with him. And so this last year, he picked Pickpool grapes and Zinfandel grapes, 2,000 pounds of each, destemmed them, put them on some dry ice, and then literally put them on a trailer and drove them straight to my brewery from California. And they never stopped, I think, just to eat and pee. And and then like they are like, yeah.
It's like they're not even trying. Like, they ate? Fuck those guys.
Yeah. How long a trip was that?
It's 20 hours of driving, but then you mix in the stops. And they brought the stuff straight to the brewery, and we were there waiting with, really beautiful barrel-aged beer, and pulled it out of their totes into ours, and then backfilled with our beer to about a 50-50 ratio.
What kind
of
grapes?
Pickpool Blanc, which is a Mediterranean variety, acidic, really nice and bright.
And the beer was a pretty straightforward, clean.
And some of our like maybe 18-month-old beer that's like was a vessel that was once held spontaneous beer, but then we just kind of roll in and blend back and forth like our base beers.
Right on.
And so beer with some nice complexity, but really a platform to showcase the grapes that we're using and using them in such a way. I mean, like there's the Pickpool and then there's the Zinfandel that he brought us. And honestly, like, if I didn't tell you that the Zinfandel was like a beer, like, you might
think it was just wine. So talk to me about how the grape juice was fermented. Was it just what was living in the beer came to life for those sugars?
Or what was living on the grapes, though, too.
Right on.
So, I mean, but
I would think the dry ice would kill it, no?
I mean, nothing was fermenting on the way here, so you're probably right. So that's possible. So it would have just been the remaining yeast that was in the beer.
And it just ate through the sugar and
I got to believe something in those because they dropped hard.
Right on.
Sub-zero. And so I got to believe there's still something there that was able to grab a hold.
That's so cool. I wish we could drink that. But what we're drinking... So again, I'm bad taster this morning because coffee and fruit.
I'll have the Zinfandel at
home. Oh, are you? Oh, perfect.
Try that one. Right.
Yeah. Victory is mine.
So as you're all listening
please
to this
save
2 months
me one.
From
Don't
now.
Let the yeah, line we'll, have it. I will have had it
yes.
by the next show we do in April. So what do you got on this glass?
That doesn't help the listeners at all.
Sure it does. Yes. They know.
They're all celebrating your great success us. And fortune.
They facce libro us. But saffron.
Is that where you're going?
I got this saffron thing going on there, like a paella, like all clean and almost chlorine-y, really.
I got a fistful of nickels.
Really?
Yeah.
I can see that. I'm okay with that, but that's what I'm calling saffron, and it's definitely the same thing.
Okay.
It's definitely that thing. Because I was like, chlorine? But it wasn't like a cleaning agent, you know what I mean? It was just something so clean that I couldn't nail it, so I went saffron. Now, you have no idea what this one is, right?
No, it tastes like a spontaneous beer to me.
Yeah.
Maybe not necessarily a blend. Younger, spontaneous beer, perhaps. But I don't want to. I don't want to say anything else, and then it be this like very.
That's all right. Don't
blended
be
thing. That
we it's a ballsy thing to drink blind out of a black glass. I'm always amazed John does it with me, but you can't. Be
it's
wrong.
Good to do it and the feel thieves okay all know. About talking a little shit because, yeah. like, I mean, I guess you didn't know.
Yeah,
like
that's why we
so
do.
So it's like you're not trying to bum anyone out about their
yeah.
beer.
Yeah, no, that's and one of the reasons that we do a blind. It's just it helps.
And you would never be allowed to bring your beer on because we want to be comfortable. If we're like, I don't love this one, right? I don't want. I don't want to be mean to you. And once you know a guy, you can't hate his beer.
Yeah,
and
the body on this is a
could
little
it be
thin.
Spelty? Is that what's going on here? Could it be an alternate grain of some kind? Because it is kind of thin. It is kind of clean. And I mean, like it's being clean, you know what I mean? If it is spontaneous, like you're saying, some kind of bug that scrubs got to it, right? Like this is
going to be on those moments where like joke's on you, it was one of your beers.
Augie, it's boat. God damn it!
That happened once before.
Wow, no, but how many minutes are we in before your first boat reference?
Dude, that wasn't even mean to boat. 23 minutes. That was being mean to me.
Yeah.
That wasn't pro boat, which is the greatest beer in the world. Okay, there I said it. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, I feel like this is probably one of those beers where at the end of the day, when everybody's back at the hotel after a big day of pastry stouts and boozy, something like this is going to hit your palate at the end of the day. Almost like what you were saying after for the first beer, like a rewarding beer in some way. Like this is going to be super refreshing.
I've got like white gooseberries and saffron.
Yeah.
And
like I'm saying with my metallic thing.
That's fine, but I'm shocked by how clean it is. Where am I going to put this? It's as a cleaning agent, right? Like you're talking about, like on the other end of today, I think this would freshen you back up right before the margaritas.
Yeah, it's a good. Yeah, it's a good scrubber.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But it's got like I don't know. I'm drinking it.
It looks like an Orval bottle, dude.
No, it does not.
I'm getting like just nice grapefruit little pith on there. It's opening up.
It's still in the Sock Monkey Thieves. I can't see it, but it's got a bulbous shape to it. So,
do you guys want to know what it is?
Well, yeah. Quick question before. You having brought them and served them, would you switch the order they came in at this point? Do you think maybe the first one is leaving behind some acidity that this one's showing poorly?
Yeah, possibly.
Against?
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I think, yeah, either way.
Okay.
Good answer.
Well done, sir.
No, I don't think.
Ladies and gentlemen, Justin Kennedy, super producer.
Either way, whatever.
What is it?
It's from True Brewing. It is a spontaneous beer.
True.
It is Wavering Radiant American Young Spontaneous Ale.
Okay. Did I not
you
fucking
nailed that.
Nail
you
it?
You fucking nailed that. See, you were worried. Too. You fucking nailed it.
I was like,
you may have had it because you did say young spontaneous.
Stuff. Is this one of the no boil beers?
I'm not sure.
It could be. That would make sense.
All right. Anyway. True is doing some really cool stuff. If you get out to Colorado, you should go check them out. And
yeah. I like them a lot.
Yeah.
They're here too, right?
They are here. Yeah, we were hanging out with
them.
We
saw them last night, right?
Yeah.
We did a collaboration with them, a blend collaboration, like last winter. And then they kind of put it on me to like kind of name the beer. And like I was like, I wanted to call it like haunted house music. And like, because I'm not really into like doom metal or metal or any of that stuff. But eventually. We landed on devil stuff. I think one message to him, I was like, y'all like devil stuff, right? And they're like, oh, that's what we're going to name it.
Oh, that's fucking great. Oh, that's so great. I now want to make like an Oreo, but with a devil sandwich
devil
between the cookies.
Yeah. We wind up
that's my art for that label, is a devil Oreo.
We wind up talking a lot about collaborations with brewers who come through, and a lot of the time it's IPAs or you know, it's stouts. It's stuff that you can sort of do in a day. When you're doing some of these longer wood age, some of these spontaneous beers, and you're doing some of these collabs, is there a different thought process? I mean, there must be a different thought process that goes into them, and you're also waiting more than just like the normal 3 weeks or something. Months or years.
The longest collaboration we're going on is interesting because it all started when we were, you know, I was still working on the Prairie stuff, and that's with Jester King. When we just completed it like last week is our Cool Ship road trip, which started back in like 2016, making wort at each other's facilities and then loading them in a truck and driving it between them and then taking their inoculated spontaneous wort and aging it in my cellar and then them driving back. So yeah, Jeff and his brother, we all drove the wort back and forth about a week ago. But we've been doing that for 3 years, and one of the breweries is now different. You know, and I'm now working on the American Solera stuff. And so like, it's like, yeah. I mean, that's.
Are you gonna steal a little bit for Solera? Are you gonna be like, guys, I need at least, you know, a hectoliter.
For
home use.
So absolutely
for home use.
But it's like, so that collaboration really doesn't even have a lot to do necessarily with us releasing the beer as much as the process of doing this thing that's like a real pain in the ass and kind of a struggle because
wasted were you guys when you're like, here's what we should do.
Oh like, man,
that's a margarita teaching night right there.
Absolutely it is and we keep doing it.
I love Jeff.
So
he's inspirational. You have terrible ideas when you sit down with Jeff.
But so next year when we do it, we'll actually try to blend some stuff and make something that we can sell. But that one's definitely more about the camaraderie.
So wait, when you're blending at that point, there will be
3 years,
three worth. Annual trips worth of driving separate work.
And like I said, like the first one was done when I was like still working on Prairie stuff. The next two were American Solera. We've changed techniques in how we're making these beers. Like a lot of evolution has occurred in this process. So it'll be interesting to see like kind of where the blend really lies, because I think like I know like I'm more happy with the spontaneous wort I'm making now than I was like a year or 2 years ago, just really learning from what we did. Because you make the stuff and then you got to wait a while to decide, like, well, how could we have made this better? Right. And it's like, that's...
Now, tell me some of the things that have changed, right? Because spontaneous fermentation seems so passive to me. I've yet to do it. Someday I hope to get a cool ship and truly, properly fuck around. But
sure.
But it seems so passive to me. What do you do to guide things certain ways? Like pick a time of year? Or
time of year, definitely. And so this one was done, you know, versus the first or second year where it was a little warmer out. And fermentation, like those barrels are making a mess in my brewery right now. The wort that we made down there, their stuff is really active. And, you know, if we'd done this maybe a month earlier, stuff would have been rolling a little slower.
And that kind of change.
But I'm not saying that that was for the better. That was just the circumstance of when we could get the beer done.
Do you feel, so having now done it over years and learned, do you think that making it go a little slower
mistakes I've made are moving the beer around, like moving the barrels
and in a car between Texas,
like,
and Oklahoma.
Well, no, like filling a barrel and then like building a new storage building and then moving the stuff. That's why they stack their stuff the way they do and don't move it, because moving and breaking those pellicles and moving those barrels around, I mean, I've had to dump some beer that we have just ruined.
And you're sad to see it go. Like, it had potential.
It sucks, but yeah, you try it once, and then we're like, oh, yeah, we got to move it in the new warehouse. Then we try it 4 months later, like, oh, God, we ruined this, and look, just get the barrels out of here. I don't want to look at them.
Now, speaking of stacking and organization, all that, that is what a Solera is, you know, in its sherry origination.
Sure.
Do you have any of those? Do you do any moves of, like, top off with generational, like, is there fun?
Not necessarily one to another in a traditional sense, as much as, you know, we've got like 19 fooders in our cellar, and
Jesus,
and we don't ever pull much more.
I want 19 fooders in
well,
my cellar.
Well, I actually just sold eight of them.
You got
to
call me, man.
Friends around. They were posted, and they're going on every corner of the country.
God damn it.
Starting next week, I got to get those emptied, packed beer, prep them and ship them. But
awesome.
it's really honestly because I had too much, and it's just hard for us.
Now, do you blend down from the fooders to barrique, to barrels, or?
No, it's typically just pulling percentages out of each one of them and making blends.
Like a toter
and then
steel.
And then we're fruiting it, we're hopping it, we're blending it. And then we have just our stainless fermenters that were they all kind of hold the same beer, and then it's pulling off of the, so in a way we do, because like the beer starting in the stainless tank, which is easier for us, because in a true Solera where you're going from one vessel to another, that's hard to do with beer because of just the potential to oxidize.
And the same thing you just said about breaking the pellicle and all that, like you are choosing to disrupt nature, right?
So we're essentially filling our stainless fermenters, modern tanks, and then we're drawing off of those to then go into the fooders to various degrees depending on how much we pulled, and then from there we're either pulling to a square tote where we're fruiting, blending with other beer, and then to package. So
yeah, right,
it is multi-step, but like one of the steps is stainless just because we can then purge that, we can bung it off, we can pressurize it, and really trying to preserve our beer, because
and square totes are a great tool, like such a great tool for just getting it out of the way and giving it the time it wants without messing your whole world
and
up.
We just picked up, you know, we got really inspired by these great beers, so we picked up four of them that have Manways on the bottom of them now, and so we're trying to do eight grape varietals this year.
Oh, cool.
Four that are kind of maybe from around, you know, Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri, and then four from California. And so those are the perfect vessel for stuff like that.
Yeah, it's, and especially if it's got a Manway, you can just dump it.
Open it up.
Yeah,
dump it out.
Fantastic. Fuck, these are all cool beers. You're making me very thirsty for a hungover guy at 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm gonna go drink a lot of beer.
Yeah.
God damn.
Pastry stouts.
Well, there's, you know, every good brewer has their saison or their lager hidden behind the desk for us. You don't have to drink pastry stouts if you can go behind the counter.
You have to. Do we have a?
Yeah, you got a letter for us, Justine?
Yeah, we got another letter from Saison Slayer
from Magaha.
CT Magaha.
Did I say it right?
Yep.
So there's a
like
guy.
Slayer, he realizes like Slayer, there's a guy, like the band, or like yeah. Slayer, like
so he calls himself Saison Slayer 69, and I excellent. Think it's the greatest fucking yeah, handle I've ever heard in my
it's
life.
Beautiful.
And the worst part is we found his real name, which is also an amazing name. I think it's just as fake. It's right. CT Magaha, so it's got to be as fake as Saison Slayer 69. Yeah, it's a guy named Tim.
he realizes that there's not like a frequent punch yeah. card or something, right? Every time he sends a letter, like
he
you don't do
two
five
separate letters
you get
in the
to,
same day.
Did he?
Yeah.
I've done that. Yeah. You get a fugue state on one topic, and then you're like, oh, and I meant to ask, is Citra really the miracle?
All right, what is the Slayer one?
What has Magaha got for us today?
So he says, hey, y'all, it's your favorite thief's thief. Your favorite thief's thief. So he's on Slayer 69. To all the host guests and Justin, what was the first craft beer that you tried, and how did it lead you to working in the beer industry?
Shit,
like this is... To working. Oh, to okay. working in the beer industry.
I was like, I haven't worked.
Shit like this is always fascinating to me. Hope y'all are well. Cheers, CT.
I think you're a great guest to ask that question, so you go first.
Yeah,
mine's trite.
Mine would be Boulevard Unfiltered Wheat.
Wow. Really?
It's nice. Oklahoma's favorite craft beer. Made in Kansas City. There's billboards in our state that
say
that.
Is that part of the new law? You must see. You must say Oklahoma.
But man.
So there's billboards that say it's Oklahoma's favorite beer from Kansas City?
It says Oklahoma's favorite craft beer, Boulevard Wheat.
That's awesome.
But I'm sure, you know what though? But I would say I'm sure it's because it's a close brewery that's larger. And they're able to get a lot of their beer into like all the restaurants and everything all over Oklahoma. So like they weren't. I bet they didn't make that up.
Yeah.
But now you know there are a lot more breweries. I mean, we're talking.
Well,
about,
John,
we're talking about 12 years ago.
In our cab ride from the plane last night, John tried to convince me that a beer was America's favorite craft beer because it's the largest American craft beer. I was like, those are two different things.
It's a billboard for Yingling Light. Yeah.
Yeah. Yingling Light, America's favorite craft beer. I was like, I feel like I don't think that's true. Anyway, although lovely beer. I'm not being mean to it. I just don't think it's America's favorite craft beer.
Mm-hmm.
John said the same claim.
So, one minor clarification. So I'm not in the beer industry. I cover the beer industry because I don't actually,
you got to keep that safe distance. Otherwise, you just write fan pieces
exactly.
like Justin.
Oh, man. It's too early to beat up on
Justin.
I just
got the finger from
poor
Justin.
Guy.
I won. I got the finger before 10 a.m. Woohoo.
Red Hook ESB was the beer that I had very, very early on that sort of inspired me in a way. And Red Hook is obviously one of those breweries that has had a lot of problems over years, not even ownership-wise, but just infection-wise and everything. But there was something just about the nuttiness to it, a little bit of like the noble hops that they used in it that sort of sparked my interest. And then that sort of dovetailed into Ithaca's Cascazilla. And we've had Chief on the show, and he was instrumental in putting that beer together. But I remember drinking Cascazilla when I was 20, 21, and just being amazed at the hop profile in it, and it sort of opened up what hops and beers could be to me. And since then, I haven't stopped, haven't looked back. What's your trait?
So the thing is, I grew up...
Is it Yingling Light?
I grew up in a house with a dad that was involved in writing beer books. So there were beers all over my house my whole life, and I drank... Like, I remember them trying to get an anchor from California for that book, and failing three times. Like, they had bottles sent from California in 1983.
Yeah.
And every time they'd show up, it's just destroyed, oxidated things. And I remember that being upsetting.
It was probably bottled that way, but
But what I'm saying is, I don't know. I just remember that going on in a house when I was, like, 8. But the story I tell is, I remember, like, I was a waiter trying to, you know, making money and trying to figure out things. And some guy I worked with, his dad, had a ski house that we could use for a weekend. We went out to Breckenridge or Colorado or Vail or wherever it was.
Yeah.
And we were there for a weekend. We went out to a bar and somebody gave me Fat Tire.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember saying, there's this cool beer in that place. And when you're in Colorado, you drink this local beer called Fat Tire. And I remember liking it. But the problem is, at the time, I was drinking Sam Adams and things like that. It all existed in my life.
I don't think that's a problem.
So what I'm saying is, it wasn't the first. But it's the first time I truly remember being like, there's a beer in this place you get when you're in this place. And it was Fat Tire at a ski resort in Colorado. And that's the story I tell for when I was like, aha, every town needs its own brewery.
Yeah. No, I've talked to a bunch of brewers who say the same thing, that that was one of those beers. Because, again, like, you couldn't get it. I mean, even in Jersey, where we're based, we couldn't get Fat Tire. They didn't distribute to us until about last year or so.
Until even 8 months ago.
Yeah, and it was one of those things where, you know, you'd talk to people on the plane going out to GABF every year, and it's like the first thing is like, first thing I'm going to do is have a Fat Tire.
Yep.
You know, because it's what you did. That beer is responsible for a lot of careers.
But it definitely, like I said, is... And to be fair, isn't that the story of that? There's like a movie from the 70s with a mustache guy driving a truckload of Coors across the Rockies.
Smokey and the Bandit.
That. Because there was a Colorado beer people wanted east of the Miss, right?
Absolutely. And, I remember my dad talking about getting Coors.
Yeah, that's like, what I'm saying. And so that seems to be a Colorado thing for every generation. It just was Fat Tire for ours and Coors for our dads, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, thanks, CT McGaha. I hope that answers Justino.
You don't want to hear my...
Oh, yeah. I was just getting to you.
Oh, okay.
I just said Justino. You said... You do. Anyway, what's yours, Justino?
So I lived in Cleveland. The first time I went to grad school, I lived in Cleveland, Ohio. And
do you have multiple graduate degrees?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
This is like, get to know the people who work on the show, Aki, please.
it's more fun to reveal.
3 years in.
Episode 392, I'm going to figure out he's a redhead.
You're married, you have a kid, my God. Yeah.
I lived downtown Cleveland, and there was a brew pub there, a brewery called Great Lakes Brewing.
Yeah,
I've heard of it.
And Elliot Ness was my go-to. It's amber lager, I think. And
it's a good one.
It's a good one, yeah. I had one last week at Barcade. Yeah.
It's still a good one. So have you found... It's like listening to a pop song too much or whatever, but beers you loved and drank a ton of, you kind of moved on from. I would definitely put poor Sam Adams Lager in that. Like, I drank a ton of Sam Adams Lager in 91, 92, 93 when I first turned 21 and could get it in bars. And it's not that I don't like it. I'm just... I've had such a palate adjustment to its flavors. I'll grab it.
If I'm at Chili's... That's eating a quesadilla explosion salad,
that's
I'm going to get a Sam Adams Boston Lager with
in
it.
In a frosted like 22 it. Ounce.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that one of those places you can upsize your mug?
Yeah.
I love that.
For just 50 cents more, yeah.
But that's where the value is.
Not to.
That's where the value is. But but you know what I mean? So Elliot Ness is still one that I'm like, oh, that's a fucking great version of that beer, whereas a bunch of, especially that specific style, which was an early craft style for me, I kind of, even Fat Tire, I'm like, oh, all right, cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But that one still holds on as cool. Right on. All right, good question, CT McGaha, Saison Slayer 69.
I love this
pentagram on the cork.
From the true bottle. Yeah.
The best part is they're all really sweet guys.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. Yeah. So I met them... When the Craft Brewers Conference was in Denver, there was like this sour fest, and I think
what
they
the
held.
Are
it
you asking?
What
you're
the
telling
funk.
Us.
Yeah. I'm never sure the details.
I was there.
You were there,
mm-hmm.
Right? But I remember somebody did something where they were like doing Kentian on the half hour or something, and people just kept going over to there, and all of a sudden, all these wonderful brewers had empty tables for 2 minutes.
Yeah, I remember that.
And
yeah.
That's when I met the true guys. People like, you got to meet these guys. They're amazing. They're from here. I went over, I was like, there's a lot of metal shit going on this table. And then I was like, these guys are adorable. Like, I just love them, and their beers were great. And I couldn't fucking believe people were waiting online for something you can buy at, you know, everywhere, when there was this little brew with these wonderful little beers over in the corner.
But yeah.
Hey, lucky me.
Absolutely.
Anyway, Chase, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Thanks.
Very cool. And so informative and so neat.
Was it?
Yeah,
sometimes I'm like, God, I'm going to be on there and be so boring.
No.
I'm going to sound really like, because I like
don't
I have
do
this,
that to
it's
yourself.
Like a resting bitch face, but I just have like a really monotone voice. But really, I'm really having a good time, and I mean to have like a more pep in my
no,
voice.
No, I think you do it right. It's first of all,
we'll
talking.
Get you on the couch for a therapy session afterwards.
This is the closest I get to Wolfman Jack. But so the Thieves get a bunch of different shows. What we want is conversation, and I think that's definitely what happened here.
Good.
And this one was a kind of brewery conversation. Sometimes it's an industry conversation. Sometimes it's a whatever conversation. Uh-huh. They seem to come along for whatever, but they seem most excited when we talk about brewing.
Yeah,
sure.
So this is definitely going to be a good episode
good.
For the people
Thanks so much, man.
All right. Anyway, so the Patreons bought Justin's bus ticket and John's first class flight.
Stop.
Which you guys could all be doing. Jump on Patreon, give us a buck. We say thank you for it. And those of you that already do Patreon us and fund our trips down to Florida so we can talk to dudes like Chase, thank you.
And our hotel too. Thanks for that.
Done. Yeah. They got you guys a hotel. Man, you guys are living.
We were going to crash with
on
you,
the Patroons. Nobody crashes with me. That's one rule of Augie travel. I need to snore alone. Anyway, so and they can write us a letter like SaisonSlayer69 did at
stillthespearpodcast@gmail.com or Facebook or comment on the webpage.
Yeah, and guys, and we'll check jump on the Facce Libra. We've been having some
Facebook.
Very
It's Facebook. Yeah, I know. But not everybody knows that when you're
we
saying
we had a conversation on the walk over here this morning that people might not know what you're talking about.
They know. You guys think everybody's stupid. No. If you're listening to this show, you're clearly brilliant and fluent in Italian. Anyway, but jump on Facebook. We've been having some cool things that pop up that go deeper than the show ever could.
People are sharing links and we're having some cool
discussions. So be part of it. And I hope that BCast is still angry gramming. So check that out. But
yeah, and we'll check these beers on two on tap so you can follow along with those as well. And
anyway, get at us. Let us know what you think.
Cheers, guys.